This is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor of WorldSweeper.com and the executive director of the World Sweeping Association. I couldn't be more pleased today with the interview we're having with a gentleman named Mike Dyke, and he is a man that many of you out there will either know on a personal basis, a professional basis, will have talked to at some point or another, because for 30 years he was involved with the Mr. Air, and then that became Masco Sweeping Organization that manufactures the Masco line of power sweepers. And relatively recently he has changed careers and is an owner-operator for a sweeping company called Sweepco, and has graciously assented to provide us with a periodic podcast and interview on the topic of owner-operators and some of the challenges that are faced out there by sweeping companies. So this is kind of a twofer for our featured contractor of the month for March 2016. So welcome, Mike. Just excited to get this rolling.
Thank you.
You have as much experience and insight into the sweeping business, the contractor end of the sweeping business, of anybody in the industry that I'm aware of. So you're not only know it from the aspect of what do people like in terms of what they're going to buy and what the problems are with the sweepers that are out there, but also you have helped many, many contractors build their businesses and make them more successful. So I'm excited about what will happen here in the long run. So start off, if you would, tell me, we know kind of how Mr. Air got started, which is now Masco. And for those of you who don't know that story, Masco was our Award of Excellence in Power Sweeping Award winner for 2016, and that's on very prominent on the WorldSweeper.com website. But talk about how you got involved with your brother Larry in promoting the Mr. Air / Masco line of sweepers, if you would, and then we'll take it from there.
Sure. I went to the University of Oregon in the 70s, and I started a parking lot sweeping business when I graduated. I was teaching junior high a little bit and dabbled in the sweeping business with some friends of mine who had a janitorial business. And it probably around 1975, Larry helped me get a sweeper together, and I started a little sweeping business in Eugene, Oregon, and ran that for a couple of years before I decided to move to California in 1979 to help my brother in some of the marketing things. I'd only planned to be there for a short time, maybe a year or so, and ended up being more than 35 years there. During the time that I was in Eugene, I would take sweepers up to your area there, up Bellingham, Washington. I remember going up there and visiting sweeping companies up there around Seattle, Oregon, and kind of the Northwest area, demonstrating sweepers in Portland and different places before I moved to California.
What was it like running a parking lot sweeping? I assume you were doing parking lot sweeping back in the mid-70s. That's really before the idea of parking lot sweeping was out there. What was it? Was it kind of the Wild West of promoting that to property managers?
Well, to be honest with you, it really isn't much different. The fundamentals aren't much different than they are today. And Timco 300 was kind of the standard sweeper in the parking lot sweeping business, that or a ride-on industrial type sweeper. You know, those were about the only kind of options that were available at that time. So when Larry started building sweepers that were a little bit different, you know, it was an opportunity to kind of show sweeping companies the different sweeper to see if that would meet some of their needs. In the Northwest, of course, we had a lot of rain, and that posed a little bit more difficulty with sweeping than other places in California, because it's always, as anybody knows who sweeps, it's much harder to sweep in rain than it is when it's dry. The parking lot sweeping sales process really it is pretty much the same as it is today. It's customer service, doing what you say you're going to do, giving good cleaning, make sure everything's done correctly, and maintaining a good relationship with the customer. Really, that hasn't changed any, and is pretty much, I would assume, how most sweeping companies operate their sweeping business today.
When you started in the sales end of the working with your brother Larry at Masco, what did you find in the contracting portion of it that you had already done some of that you feel gave you a leg up? Did you feel that that gave you a unique understanding that you were able to help contractors build their businesses better and give them a lot of ideas about what to do?
I think the biggest philosophy that I got from my brother and his partner, Leonard Vella, at that time, and still to this day, is cost of operation. It's hard to believe. Now gasoline prices are low, but, you know, for a while they were in the high $4 a gallon. But in those days, I would guess gasoline was probably 60, 70 cents a gallon. And it's still at that point, you know, my brother's main focus was how to build a sweeper that would operate at a lower cost of operation. So the truck of choice at that time, I believe, was a Ford Courier. And the sweepers that we built on it were kind of an oval tank sweeper, and it didn't dump. You had to rake it out. And the general concept was cost of operation and simplicity. Larry wanted to build a sweeper that you could work on at home. You didn't need special parts for. There was very little. There was no hydraulics. Weren't many power items on it. A hand crank to crank the sweeper head up, rake the sweeper out. It was a real bonehead, down to basics kind of sweeping operation.
I think there are a few contractors listening to this that would like to go back to those times. Maybe not the rake out part, but not the problems with hydraulics, and to have things be a little simpler. It's amazing what dirt can do in electronic components, as an example. I've heard so many examples, and I know they'd like to go back to the ease of an engine in something like a Ford Courier rather than Tier 3 or Tier 4 diesel. There's no question there. You have decided to go in here in your, as a second career, to start a sweeping company, Sweepco. You're sweeping in your general area around where you are in California. And talk about that process. And you want that to be an owner-operator, and that's what we're going to key in on with our future conversations together, is that of, you know, how an owner-operator can do a little better job. What was the process like to decide to go into sweeping? How are you finding that these days compared to what you expected, say?
One of the things that, before I go to that, answering that question, is that while I was sweeping in Eugene and in California, I thought that I knew a lot about sweepers. This is early 80s. And the first show that we ever went to was the American Public Works Show in Kansas City. That was in 1980. We met many people from all over the United States and were exposed to all kinds of sweeping equipment that we had not been that familiar with. With those contacts, the sweeper that I had there, I was able to give several demonstrations. And I have to say, I got quite an education on sweeping that really made me realize that sweeping parking lots, other than the name, is nothing related to each other. For example, in New Jersey or Minnesota, or I always categorize the country into two kinds of territory, snow country and states that didn't have snow. Because once you have snow, then the whole sweeping process is completely different. A sweeping company in Kalamazoo, Michigan, looks completely different than a sweeping company in Anaheim, California. It's in the snow states, it's much harder, much more sand, much more rocks, dirt, and those things are very hard to sweep. In states where you have more sunshine, you deal more with litter, and the sweeping process is a much simpler process. So that was the biggest education that I got. So everything that I'm relating to is California sweeping, which for, I would say, a big majority of the country is maybe not relevant or different. There are the states that I always refer to as the smile states, which you would start somewhere in Oregon and go to the southern part of the United States and go up Texas along the Gulf Coast and then on up to, say, South Carolina. Those states, sweeping is much easier and would be similar to sweeping in California.
Going back to the show again for a minute, and I'll be the one that defers my previous question this time. When you got to that show, I know that there were big sweepers there. Were there tenants and those kind of little ride-on sweepers? Did they display at the show?
Absolutely. Tenant was a big company that had a big display. Of course, Elgin. Elgin was a big operation. Timco was there. Those were the companies that were there. In fact, we made friends with the Tenant people, and Mr. Parsons was the president of Elgin, I believe, at that time. And we became friends with him. I guess a small little claim to fame for Masco Sweepers was he asked me to come visit him after the show. So I went to Elgin and visited him. And when I pulled on the parking lot, these engineers came out with their white engineered coats on. And when I started dust control system on it, they all swarmed on the dust control system. And I couldn't figure out why they were so interested in the dust control system. And this was something Larry came up with. He had a motorhome that had a on-demand water pump. It's a simple electric water pump. You turn the switch on, and it would pump water. Everybody who has a motorhome knows the sound of one. And he thought that would be a good idea to put on the water dust control system. Well, I found out later on that all the Elgins had a belt-driven water pump. And one of the problems with that is if it would run out of water, it would lose its prime or the pumps would wear out. And that's all these guys, all these engineers were interested in was the, at that time, we used the brand SureFlow water pump. Shortly thereafter, they converted all their sweepers over the SureFlow water pump.
Well, that's kind of a claim to fame right there, I'd say, with Elgin being the power that they are. The reason I ask about Tenant, though, is that they're gone completely from the National Pavement Expo these days. None of those smaller ride-on sweepers are there anymore. And I don't know where they display, but certainly not an NPE.
Well, in those days, there was no other way for people who made equipment to come in contact with the industry other than trade shows. Trade shows were the mainstay of all marketing. That's where you came to see equipment, to make contacts, to dealership networks. It was the only way you could sell equipment. So the American Public Works would have purchasing people, public works directors. That's what they came to those shows for, to see what would be equipment that they could use in their operation, their cities, to maintain streets and roads and everything. So it up until, you know, the dawn of the internet, it was pretty much the only way to communicate with the industry.
Yeah, that's certainly something that's changed as well. You have decided to become an owner-operator. Talk a little bit about that process. I mean, you could have quit doing, but you've decided that that's not what you want.
Well, after, you know, selling sweepers for 35, 40 years, I'm going to be official retirement age this month in March. I'll be 65. And I was just looking for something that maybe was not, there was a lot of travel involved. There was a lot of pressure involved every day, production. And I was looking to, I guess, simplify my life a little bit. And a couple of opportunities, I called them the Senior Citizen Sweeping Organization. I had about three friends of mine who were a little bit older than me, different reasons, health-wise, they were at a point where they needed to make a change. There were good opportunities for me, and so took those opportunities, kind of applied the same sales approach that I've used in selling sweepers to operating a sweeping business. And I have to say, it's a little bit different, you know, the San Francisco Bay Area as many people know, is economically pretty strong. You have Apple, you have Google, you have all kinds of the world's biggest corporations here. They're growing leaps and bounds. Consequently, it was good grounds for having a service business where people were willing to pay good money for excellent service. That's not true in every part of the country. I'm fortunate that to be in an area of good economic growth.
Yeah, that does make a lot of difference. That's certainly true. And so your concept here is to just be an owner operator, run a single sweeper, or will you build a route and hire people on, or have you done that? What's your plan?
Well, currently I just have one sweeper myself. I drive it about 95% of the time. Occasionally in the leaf season, I will have a little bit of help for about 2 months out of the year. Workload is heavier. Outside of that, pretty much doing everything myself. It's good exercise. I get out. I've built a schedule that works around my personal life and doing all the work myself.
Do you have any kind of tips, just general tips for somebody that's an owner-operator, the things that they need to do? I mean, it's certainly a crimp on your social life. I know that. In terms of, you know, scheduling your life around it or trying to schedule your routes around your life, is there any words of wisdom?
I don't know if it's wise or not, but no matter, even if you have a fertile soil to start your business or you have a tough area, it's going to be hard no matter what to start any business. And this is the thing that I ran into, because a lot of what I did in selling sweepers was related to helping people start a parking lot sweeping business in whatever part of the country they were. Many people have read the little booklet I wrote on how to start a sweeping business. If you went to MascoSweepers.com, their webpage, it's published on their webpage. It's not rocket science. It's real basics. You know, do what you say you're going to do. Stay in contact with people. When you do good work, tell them that you do good work so they know it. And just be able to find out what problems people have and solve their problems. In these days of companies that outsourcing, passing it down the line, doing the actual hard work of cleaning baby diapers off a parking lot is something that seems like everybody avoids at all costs. So that if you can find somebody that needs you to do something, and if you do it, they are usually very grateful and they're willing to pay a very good rate to get it done, basically because nobody wants to do it.
So you think it's an advantage to let them know that you'll be the one that's going to be out there doing it. The bottom line is you, the buck
100%.
Stops with you. And okay.
100%. Because what happens in a lot of businesses now, if you have a sweeping business where you have an employee, you tell that employee to go to X, Y, and Z spot and to go sweep up the parking lot and then to come back to the shop. And if they do what they're told, they do that, they come back, that's it. You don't know what they saw out there. You don't know what went on out there. You don't know how they did it. You assume you know, but I'll guarantee you, you don't know. Because what goes on in a parking lot is, it's a different world out there. So the point is that when I'm out there sweeping and I see signs broken down, garbage left behind a shopping center, window that's broken, whatever it is, the sprinkler system's not working, a tree needs trimming. The next day, I comment those things to the principal, owner, whoever's in charge of that property, ask them, hey, your tree is, the limbs are broke down or the water spigots are squirting out or whatever, and I can fix that for you. And usually that is met with surprise, that someone would actually look at something and say, I can fix it. How much? You say, it'll do it for this. And those things I found are far more profitable than the actual sweeping process. And it also secures your relationship with that principal.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense that that's the case. And do you go find somebody to do it? If you can't do it, you just make sure it gets done by somebody on those?
I try to do as much as I can, and if I can't, you try to put together a group of people who, you know, have a similar outlook that you do about business and are responsible and reliable and will do a good job in a timely fashion, when they're able to accomplish that, then your status with that principal is going to go up tremendously, and to the point where, you know, they'll just, many of them will say, listen, Mike, you see something wrong, fix it and bill me, you know. And once you get to that level, that's really what you're looking for.
You bet. I couldn't agree more. That's a level of trust that's not easy to build, but it can build pretty fast when you know, somebody has an opportunity to see just how you operate and what you're doing. I really like that.
Well, I think that's the difference between an owner-operator situation also. When a company is running 20 trucks, it's hard for them to have that same personal relationship with so many people. And that is a good business, and more than likely they make way more money than I do. But if you look at what one sweeper guy can do, given the parameters that you're working in, what I try to do is maximize the profit in whatever I do. Another company who wants to grow a big and have lots of equipment, they're looking at gross revenues to compensate for those kind of things. And they're very successful. I know many companies like that. I've sold sweepers to them that run, you know, they have 20, 30 sweepers. They have 150 employees. And, you know, that's just another way of doing it. My personality is such that I really couldn't go into that type of a business. It's not my personality. It's not how I want to live my life. It's too intense for me. Mm-hmm. So this has worked out for me, especially at the ripe old age that I am.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's a lot to that, and I've heard a number of contractors through the years talk about being more profitable when they were smaller and having fewer headaches, and they don't have the medical bills from things like ulcers. So that's
there
too.
You just there's no way if you get 10 or so employees, there's just no way you can control what they do out there at night. And so you do your best, and many big companies have their methods of management that are very effective. There's just no way that you can control. The sweeping industry is a little bit unusual. If you run a store and you have an employee that works underneath you, you kind of keep an eye on them all day. But in this business, you're going to hand the keys over to a $70,000 sweeper. You're going to give them a credit card. You're going to go to bed and say, I want you to drive all over town for 8 hours, and I want you to be real responsible and do everything I tell you to do, and then I want you to come back, and I'll see you in the morning.
And I'll pay you $10 or $12 an hour.
Yeah, and that formula, no matter how you cut it, it's a very precarious formula, because the chances of things not going the way you hope it would go are great. That is why the whole concept of subcontracting came about, you know, in the 70s, is because they felt that they couldn't control them as an employee. So the way that they would try to do it was give them a piece of the action and would only pay them if they did what they were told to do, and in the form of a subcontractor arrangement. That would ensure that they would have more to lose if they didn't do a good job. In many cases, that works to a degree, but like everything else, it's become diluted, multiple subcontractors, to the point where it's just a very small step above an employee.
Well, you know, I think that kind of covers the area that I was hoping to cover in terms of the overview of you getting into contracting.
Sure.
And why. One of the things that you have offered to do here is to work with us and owner-operators and put some of your knowledge out there for, one might say, posterity, but to help the, especially owner-operators, and I'm sure all contractors will find something to get out of it, but to do some periodic podcasts like this with me on different topics. And so what are some of the topics that are off the top of your head you think we should cover in depth in future times? I'll tell you one that I know is really underserved is the best way to use a backpack blower in an operation. That can also go ahead.
Well, which leads to what I was going to say is the number one problem that I deal with is noise. is trying to control the noise in a sweeping operation, because communities become more and more developed. They're putting shopping centers closer and closer to apartment complexes, or vice versa. They're building apartment complexes closer to retail locations where this has become a problem. And I've solved that problem in many different ways. Electric blowers that are designed as low noise, time application. There's no easy solution to those problems, but I think as an owner-operator, I'm able to deal with some of those problems a little better than an employee or a subcontractor, because as I see the situation, I think I have a better ability to solve a problem than an employee that maybe is not vested in their job as much as I am.
Mm-hmm.
Other things, dust control. As I told you earlier, I want to send you some photographs in an area, do as I say, not as I do. Some maintenance things on the sweeper that are important that don't get done. Something I've preached about for many years that I didn't do myself, as far as keeping the screens clean and things like that. Just sharing those different kind of points.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to hear that problems other people are having, and I'm sure over the last 40 years I've dealt with 90% of them and may have a possible answer, solution, or sometimes conversationally working through the issues can be very helpful.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking routing, scheduling, also selling a route. I think that's an area that hasn't been discussed enough, where you should figure out, you know, kind of target your market and how you go about that to see about a route that, you know, makes sense for you that could be put closer together.
I've helped many, many companies buy and sell their business. I have opinions about how that has been done and can be done. Everybody, when you're buying and selling anything, of course, everybody has a different way of doing it. But there are some basic principles and guidelines that I have shared with many customers on, especially selling their business, how to put a value to this crazy business we're in, which is complicated, because you can go ask specialists and experts who buy and sell businesses, and they really don't have a very good concept of it, because service industries are hard to sell, because it's what we refer to as blue sky. That's pretty much what you're selling. Once a person buys a business as a service business, it could all go away very quickly if service is not performed like the previous owner did.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure. And finding ways to maybe structure the payments so that it makes sense for all the parties and maximizes the chance of that happening. And
traditionally, a sweeper guy will have a feeling about what their business is worth, and it's usually way more than what someone is willing to pay for it. Sometimes it takes consideration to get a better and accurate evaluation of what their sweeping business is worth.
Yeah, I look forward to talking to you about that in detail. Is there anything else you think we should talk about in this initial conversation, or do you think we should wrap it up and then invite those listeners?
No, I think it's good, and like I said, you can put my information out, and they can get a hold of me through you, and
sure. We
can look at what questions are. I'd be more than happy to work with anybody in regard to any aspects of the sweeping industry. The street sweeping industry, of course, is quite a different business, and I have had some experience with that, but not as much. And it is a more complicated business. Parking lot sweeping is a very simple business. The problems are much less complicated.
Well, and you certainly have lots and lots of experience on that in that regard as well. So with that, let's encourage those listening to ask questions about things that you'd like to know more about, and we'll set up a periodic podcast with Mike to cover those topics. I think that'll be great fun, and we're going to try to find a headset that has good enough noise cancellation so that we can have these podcasts while Mike's actually sweeping, if we can do it. We'll see if technology allows. We'll move to that. That would be fun, too, I think.
Sounds great.
Okay, well, thanks. We've been talking to Mike Dyke. He's the owner-operator of Sweepco. He's in the San Francisco area, and Mike has many decades of working with sweeping contractors through the MASCO organization, we will have some periodic updates and ideas and really hone in on and drill down into some of the different topics of interest to power sweeping contractors in future podcasts. So thanks again, Mike.
Can I tell you one funny story?
Yeah. I think it's good to end with a story always.
It took place in not far from where you live. Larry and I had met at the Seattle International Airport. I had a sweeper, and I had some demos lined up, and we went to meet this guy. I don't remember his name. He was an older gentleman. He was in a small community not too far from Bellingham, and we had an appointment to meet him, and I knocked on the door, and he yelled from inside the house, "Come on in." So this is like 1978. So Larry and I went in the house. There was some old sweepers out front and some junky equipment laying around, and we weren't quite sure what we were getting into. And this guy, we told him, he says, "Oh, Mike, come on in." And he was in the bathtub taking a bath. So we were talking to him about sweepers while he was in the bathtub. Not a very long conversation, I'll have to say.
I could see. You'd want to get the sale right away, I think, on that one.
Yeah. Anyhow, I told him, I said, "I think we'll come back later if that's okay with you." Yeah. That was the only time that I ever tried to sell a sweeper to a guy in a bathtub that I know of.
Uh-huh. That's great. That's great. Well, that is a great story to end with. And I'd look for, we'll have some more of those kind of anecdotes, I'm sure, as time goes on. Both of our lives have probably had some. And I'll add a story to that. When I first started writing about sweeping with the SuperVac Quarterly in 1987, and I asked the people at Schwartz Industries, who I was writing this for, the Schwartz family, and I said, "Well, what's my audience?" And he said, "Well," he said, "we've got people that, you know, are doing, you know, several million dollars a year in sweeping." But he says, "I hate to tell you, but there's going to be some of those guys that are going to come in at 4 a.m. They're going to go to the fridge and get a beer. Then they'll look at their mail and they'll find the SuperVac Quarterly there, and they'll sit back in their recliner and they'll scratch their butt and they'll read your magazine." And he said, "So you've got to write to those people." And at the same time, I can tell you about a contractor that we spoke to recently, and he said that he had a real challenge when he hit $100,000 in billing, and then he had another almost lost his company challenge when he hit $1 million in billing, and now he's at another challenge to try to hold on to his company, and he's at $10 million in billing. So he said there's some pretty sophisticated people out there as well, so good luck on hitting all sides to that.
That's true.
We'll give a shot at hitting all sides of it when we get back together. Well, thanks again, Mike.
You're welcome.